Good morning. Thank you for the kind invitation and the opportunity to speak with you and to you. I stand here for the German Research Foundation. For those of you who are not familiar with the DFG, it's the major funding agency in Germany, and it funds research in all fields of the sciences and the humanities, ranging from archaeology to zoology. And it does not only fund research, it also funds information infrastructure projects, and that will become clear in many of the slides I'm going to present to you. When I thought about how to structure a presentation which has to answer the question how funders drive the change in publishing and in publications, I thought it might be good to at least briefly address five different areas. At first, the area of impacting new business models. Secondly, open access implementation. Third one, driving change through supporting technology, deployment and development. Fourth, strategy papers and policy initiatives. And finally, change also happens through national and international collaboration with other funders. As regards change through new business models, many of you might be familiar with the so-called national licenses, which in the last years in Germany developed into so-called alliance licenses. And there are distinct differences between these types of national licensing. The original idea with national licensing has been to improve the coverage for digital information in Germany, because we realized that other countries, mainly in Europe, were much better off with digital information. And so about 2004, we started with the acquisition of journal backfiles and with completed databases. But of course, what researchers really need, especially researchers in the natural sciences, life sciences, medical sciences, is access to the content of running journals. And this has been one of the motivations in developing the alliance licenses. This further extends the model of the national licenses to include running content via an opt-in model, because the DFG alone couldn't, as has been the case with the national licenses, cover the costs for all of these licenses. And so we found an agreement which says that the DFG covers about 20% of the costs for a license, and these 20% are not for the license per se, but rather for value added, which is included in this license. And there are three major added values which go together with an alliance licenses. First of all, there's a moving wall for the conversion into national licenses. This means that even those institutions which, for whatever reasons, might not participate in alliance licenses can typically, after 1 year, have access to the then backfile of the journal as those who took part in a license from the very beginning. Second, with the license together goes the entitlement to local hosting, so that the content, for example, can be integrated into course packs or into virtual research environments. And this might be most attractive to institutions and to researchers as well. A license also has the allowance to deposit the articles from a licensing institution into this institution's or this author's open access repository. As a second example, under the heading of business model, I want to provide you something which might surprise you, because I list that under business model. And this is a business model, sort of vice versa business model, because here with public funding, something had been established that can be used by the publisher community and by editorial offices. Recensionet, that's the name of a DFG-funded project, is a possibility to bring together the reviews from historical literature, which are a very relevant resource to the scholars in history. It's a platform that mainly presents reviews that have only been published in print so far, and many of them are published either in the form of a preprint or a postprint. Of course, this brings increased visibility to these reviews, and it also increases the discoverability for the researchers who want to work with these texts. It's, of course, an additional dissemination channel, and it's very easy to see from which journals all these reviews have been taken from, because the visual appearance remains intact. So far, the platform collects 29 participating journals across the whole of Europe, and it can be accessed in various languages. And I think, and that's the reason that I said it's a business model. Some of these journals even took the opportunity to say, well, it might be good for us to publish our review articles only in this channel, because then we have more space in our printed volumes in order to bring the proper research articles, because otherwise many of them will be published only 2, 3, or even 4 years later when there's not that much interest for them any longer. My second point is changes through open access implementation. Most of you will know that the DFG funds projects in the area of the green road to open access, as well as in the area of the golden road towards open access. For example, in the golden road, by establishing new open access journals, or by supporting the further expansion of already existing journals and transformation into open access. I only want to briefly mention that the DFG provides open access to its own publications, and a remarkable example for that might be a collection which is about the dangers that arise from specific chemical substances, for example, dangers when people who work somewhere have contact with these substances every day. And I think about 1 year ago, maybe not even that long, this collection became openly accessible, and it's, as you can easily imagine, used by many industries and also by ministries and public government. And so I think it's a good example to demonstrate the societal values of open access. But the main point I want to bring here as regards change through open access implementation is a funding program we implemented about 3 years ago. It's called Open Access Publishing. And the idea behind this funding program is that the DFG provides grants to universities as institutions in order to enable these universities to set up open access publication funds. There are specific limitations for the universities that want to spend that money. Of course, the money can only be used to cover those articles where an author from the university is a submitting or corresponding author. And the money can also only be used to cover the costs in original open access journals, not in the journals which follow the hybrid model. And the costs are only covered up to the amount of 2,000 euro. And as you see on the slide, it's been slow progress, but it's been steady progress, and we can only hope that the progress continues. We started with 12 universities who received grants in 2010. In 2012, this number already doubled to 24 universities. And of course, this goes well together with an increase of the money. One of the ideas behind this program, of course, has been to address the necessary shifts from the subscription budget, or at least from part of the subscription budget, to a budget for an open access publication fund. Of course, if you look at the statistics, the number of articles published in true open access journals at the moment is much too small to really meet that objective. On the other hand, those universities that decided to apply, many of them for the very first time, now have the possibility to capture relevant data and to really work on a pre-publication management, which is a prerequisite to work towards that objective. It might be surprising to you, but many universities, before applying in that, didn't have any clue about the number of publications or the costs involved with publications, which arose from university-based work. And this might be a remark you think, that's a typical funder remark, but I think it's maybe the most important development which goes together with that funding program. The most important thing is not the money we provided to the universities. The most important things are the developments which had been set in motion at the universities as institutions. When we started this program, universities began to think about open access, which you can see, for example, by the open access declarations that had been issued by them. And the declaration is not a value as a political statement. A declaration has a value because it tells the authors what they can do in order to provide open access and where they can get assistance for that. And as I said before, the universities, many of them for the first time, became aware of the various funding flows towards open access publishing. There might be central publication funds, the authors do use their own research budgets, there is money in the faculty, there might be overheads which had been used. And one idea, of course, which arose from that funding is, why not install something like a clearinghouse in order to bring all these diverse funding streams together, because it might then be much easier and especially much more efficient to cover open access publication charges. I already mentioned, of course, one welcome development here, that's the assistance. Universities really said, well, there is this dedicated person who can answer your question as regards technical, legal, or financial matters in the area of open access. And many universities, of course, are so clever that they say, well, if we really pay for the costs, we expect that the articles we fund go into our own repository, because they see it as their own intellectual property. Let me briefly talk about changes through technology. As you are well aware of, open access is not only done by the publisher and the publisher community and commercial or not-for-profit entities. The last year saw a strong development where researchers, as editors of journals, decided to run their own journals independently of any commercial or not-for-profit offers they might have been able to use. And at the DFG, there'd been a time when we saw many researchers which came to us and said, well, we have an idea for a new, very good open access journal, but we can only establish that one when our grant also contains a specific part of the budget in order to pay someone who is an expert in computer sciences, because we need to build the platform. And of course, it's nonsense to have platforms built, one platform after another platform, after the next one, after the next one. And so already in 2006, we had a round table where all those projects which so far built e-publishing software came together. And as a result of that round table, a project had been undertaken which sort of collects the various publishing software. And it does not only collect them, it provides the possibility to participate here. Everyone who has a software, or has knowledge about a software, can participate, can contribute, can, for example, make their own entries in that platform. And moreover, the platform is not only a reference tool where you can look up things, it's accompanied by a variety of fora where, for example, specific technical problems can be discussed. The interesting thing to me is, whereas the platform started out as a platform for e-publishing software, it now increased, and there is a lot of information for tools, for example, regarding digitization or long-term archiving. And as far as I know, there are also ideas to either use that platform or make a very similar one for tools in the area of virtual research environments. Another topic as regards publication and the changes publications might see in the near future is the topic of so-called enhanced publications. I only mentioned briefly one project which played around with the idea, well, if we do want to work with enhanced publications, we need, of course, methods to describe the various compounds within that objects. And this project started out as a testbed, which Bizet himself examining how compound objects as regards e-thesis and as regards long-term archiving could be described. It's fairly well documented, it's openly accessible, you can look at that. The reason I bring it here is because that project really reminded me of another roundtable discussion we had here in Frankfurt 2009, where researchers, publishers, and people from the library community came together in order to talk about ebooks. And many researchers there then said, well, we are sort of disappointed by ebooks because the ebooks don't really exploit the full possibilities of the digital media. And I think what lay behind this assumption is that ebooks so far only sort of transferred, sort of copied the exact appearance of the physical book into a digital format, but playing around with a variety of elements, with pictures, including films, including databases, whatever. That was something which had been missing so far. And maybe developments that enable a better description and a better work with compound objects and enhanced publications might help in this regard as well. Well, policy initiatives, this is something which Robert already mentioned. Our policy initiative might be familiar to at least one of you. In July 2012, the DFG issued a new position paper with suggestions for the activities in our main funding areas. I only want to briefly refer to the funding area electronic publications, because that's probably the most relevant here. It makes suggestions to, in the next year's fund, dedicated projects addressing, first of all, the hybrid open access model. Of course, that's the whole issue of transparency and the relation between a subscription model and the open access publishing. It also says, well, open access needs to be brought together much closer than we did it so far with the model of national licensing. Also, the conversion of prestigious journals in open access shall be encouraged by dedicated funding activities. And at last, projects for open access monograph should be supported. Of course, a policy paper is a policy paper, and there is a need to act upon the policy paper. And another example, which of course is related to publishing, is the example I want to bring here. That's what we did in the area of research data. There is a data policy which has been issued by the Alliance of German Science Organizations on 24th of June 2010. And after that, the DFG issued a call for tender named Information Infrastructure for Research Data, and it asked for two various kind of projects. First one, to develop a subject-specific organization form to secure, archive, and reuse data where these forms so far did not exist. And secondly, where already a professional data management and data repositories had been established, to further deploy them and to further professionalize them. As you see here, we were able to, I think, from out of 90 proposals which had been handed in, to fund 27 of them with a grant volume of 10.5 million. And as you can also see, it's funding or its projects in all areas of sciences and the humanities. My last two slides address the need and necessity to work collaboratively with others in the field. An example for Germany, or two examples for Germany, are first of all, the information platform Open Access, and it's important to note it's not only an information platform, it's a whole network behind the platform. And the network, for example, every year in September, October, organizes the so-called Open Access Days. I know that one of you, which are here in the room, had been present at the Open Access Days. Maybe it's worthwhile for others to consider going there. Maybe, because time's running out, very briefly, only mentioning the priority initiative Digital Information by the Alliance, of German Research Organizations. I want to mention that because I think a brochure, which is now in the final stages of being published in the next week, will be presented to the universities, to the research institution, which gives, in the form of various short articles, ideas about how to develop different elements into a strategy for open access at an institutional level. How, for example, to nominate a person who is dedicated to open access tasks, or how, for example, to set up an open access publication fund. And this kind of collaboration does not only happen at a German or at a European level, it also happens, as many of you are aware of, at a global level, or I should rather say is going to happen at a global level, because in May 2013, next year, the so-called Global Research Council will take place. I'm a little sorry to say that at the moment there's not much I could say as regards the content, because the main elements which go into discussion in May next year will be defined by various so-called regional conferences which take place now from the mid of October until mid of December this year in the five regions of the world which are listed here at the bottom of the slide, and only then we might see which kind of action plan the Global Research Council is going to discuss. Thank you very much.